The secret to summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Its signature scent of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. 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 This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Delaney. So what?
It's the Twits Odyssey. We're almost at the end. I think this might be the last one, Sam. I mean, I say that. I've said that before. But
Britain's Britain's primary literary podcast.
Well, that's what we've become, isn't it? Yeah. And I mean, we've affected social change as well throughout the last 20 weeks or whatever we've done this for. Because, of course, the Dahl family this week squirreled away an apology somewhere on his website for all the anti-Semitism that we've highlighted.
Well, I think that there's a conspiracy against Top Flight Time Machine in mainstream society.
Yeah.
Do you
think that? I'm glad you've said that. Please elaborate.
I just think that the impact we have, so like we see the sort of figures, like we know the amount of people who listen to this podcast, the amount of people who are members of the Iron Filing Society, the amount of people who come and see us live or buy our merchandise. And it's quite a lot, right? It's a good number. But if you also look at the social impact we have, the way that, like, Lampard, to take one example, has passed into the common lexicon.
Yes.
Right? And the way that we have forced the Dahl family to apologise.
Didn't Patrice Evra use the verb Lamparding the other day on Sky Sports?
Yeah, exactly, right? So he's a listener, right? And I think that because a couple of things, I suppose. We're anti-establishment. We often rail against the monarchy, right? Yeah. We represent a rebel spirit, right?
Definitely. We're like the Johnny Depp of podcasting.
Yeah, we believe in personal choice, right? Yeah. And we believe in increasing the amount of rest people do, which is not what the capitalist society, the puppeteers, the Geppettos of consumerism and extreme capitalism want to hear. They don't want to hear influential people telling the masses to have like little naps in the middle of the day.
I think we can already forget about this being the last Twitter episode, but carry on, yeah?
Yeah, right. So that is why, despite the fact we know the amount of numbers we have, but do you ever see us nominated for podcast awards? Do you ever see us in the iTunes chart, right?
No. Nope.
Because that is for the mainstream, right? The people who will toe the line, right? The people who will not advise you to have naps, right? They're for the that's for the in crowd, right? The snobs, right? Yep. And they are the people who are going, oh, have you heard this podcast? And they'll get talked about. But we're the ones who are affecting real change. And that's why I think there's a conspiracy, because I think you can see the changes that are being made. That reflects on the fact that we are, I believe, Britain's number one, possibly number two podcast, right?
I would totally agree with that, yeah, completely.
But it will not be covered because we've got the mainstream media, your Murdochs, your Guardians, because Guardian very sort of like really, really into podcasts. Do you know what I mean?
Some podcasts more than others.
Yes, yeah, some podcasts. Don't write a porno. Yeah. And they don't. They can't handle the shit that we say. There's a great song which we have yet to release, and maybe we'll finally get it out in time for Christmas. That a very talented cantor produced for us called "Living Out Loud." Oh mate, we've got to get it out. The thing is, we never finished the video, but I say stick the video out as it is for Christmas, because when we first heard this song, which was way back earlier in the year, I think we both agreed it was one of the best pop songs ever made. And that, and we didn't make it. I mean, it's inspired by us, but we didn't make it. So it's not us blowing our own trumpet, but it's a genuinely, it stands up as a genuinely great pop song.
Yeah.
Right? And, I mean, it's up there with, like, the likes of Cuddly Toy by Roachford.
Yeah. It's Tiger Feet by Mudd.
Yeah. It's in the elite level of pop singles, right? But the one of the opening lines, you'll remember, it's a little spoiler alert for you all here, but one of the early opening lines is, Delaney and Dawson will show you how to break free of society's shackles, right? And that line spoke a lot to me. I welled up a bit because I thought, this guy's right. That is exactly what we're showing people how to do. Break free of society's shackles. And that is why the authorities in the establishment want to do everything they can in their power to shut us down.
Right, okay. I mean,
Is that what you were thinking?
Exactly that, exactly that. I mean, I was looking, there's a thing I saw online yesterday on deadline.com. Don't know what that's about, but it says how podcasts are becoming a Hollywood goldmine. The number of podcasts being adapted for television is set to explode over the course of the next few years, with audio IP rivaling books as Hollywood's go-to source for inspiration. So I think it's fair to say that we're probably going to be making the move to Channel 5 at the very least. At some
fucking
point.
Least, mate.
How and why and when, I don't know, but watch out for that, because I mean, that's going to happen according to this thing I've read online. So that's another thing to think about.
Deadline.com, is it called?
Deadline.com.
I'm getting in touch with them. Hello? Yeah. Hello, is that Deadline.com? It's Sam Delaney here, Britain's best journalist. I've called up to give you a hot tip on a lead I have. Actually, did I say my name is Sam Delaney? It's not. It's John Journalist. It's John Journalist. I'm an independent journalist. I have a hot lead on a podcast called Top Flight Time Machine. Would you like to write that down? Yes, it's T-O-P space F-L-I. Yes, now, I would like to remain anonymous, but I'm just giving you the tip that they're in advanced talks with Channel 5 about the TV adaptation, a multi-million pound TV adaptation.
No, it's not a football podcast. I know it sounds like a football podcast, but no, it isn't.
No.
It's mainly about ghosts
breaking
and
free
walls.
It's about breaking free of society's shackles. Yes, that's right. Shackles. S-H-A-C-K... It's what they put on slaves in the olden times. Listen, I'm not doing your job for you. Look it up. Just make sure you write about it next time, because the fact that Peter White, his name, is the man who wrote this story on your Deadline website, and it was remiss of him to overlook our success. I mean, their success. Anyway, goodbye.
So the twits, yeah? Can we get back to that?
Yeah.
We're at the page at the back now. We're past the story. This is the section, the bonus features, if you like. And we're at the page which is entitled A Day in the Life of Roald Dahl, the anti-Semite. It begins, Roald Dahl had a very strict daily routine. He would eat breakfast in bed and open his post.
Who brought him the breakfast in bed then?
Well, I don't know. Did he not have a servant or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah, Quentin Crisp.
Quentin Blake.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Quentin Blake.
Quentin Crisp. Maybe it was Quentin Crisp.
Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling. That's his little bell. I'm ready for my breakfast.
I wonder what time the post would arrive. This must have been the olden days when your postman would come at, like, 7 in the morning. Do you remember that? Instead of fucking 3 in the afternoon.
Fucking,
when post was important. Wasn't it?
Fucking idling up at 3. There you go, come. Have it or don't. Some of this isn't even for me. Well, it's all you're getting. Open it or don't. Makes no odds to me. Legally, once I've handed it over, it's not my responsibility. You have taken legal responsibility by having that held in your hand.
I took the dog for a walk on Sunday afternoon, and when I came back, I normally leave the porch door open, right? Just because it's fucking quicker to get back in. So when I got back, I opened the porch door and there's a fucking huge box in there. I thought, there's been a delivery. Don't remember ordering anything this big. Mm. And the top of the box had come open and it was full of fucking toilet rolls. I hadn't ordered it. And I looked on the label and had this woman's name on it. And it didn't even have a house number or the street listed. It just had her name, Sunderland, and then it had the postcode. So it was for my street. So the cunt's just gone, ah, fucking hell. I've got no fucking house number on. I'll put it in that house there. Oh, the door's open. It was like fucking Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Yeah, just fucking let yourself postman in. Spinning.
Tried me porch porridge. So
yeah, I had fucking... but you could look at it a different way and think like the fucking toilet roll fairy spin.
Yeah, you know what, Sam? Right, it wasn't of the quality toilet roll that I prefer. That's what I'm saying. It was it was low quality toilet roll, let's just say.
Was it second class? Was working man's toilet roll?
It was industrial toilet roll, let's call it that.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to keep it. So I ended up having to Google the name of the woman, found her on Facebook, recognised her from down the street, and I ended up taking a fucking box of bog rolls down the road for her.
Excuse me, love. I've got a lot of bog roll here for you. I don't know why. I mean, it's not my business, but it seems a lot. I don't know whether you've been having problems with your guts or what. It's not my problem. not my business, but I just thought I'd drop it off for you.
I had to look you up on the internet to find you. Oh, that's all right.
Yeah. I looked at some of the pictures of you. I noticed that there weren't many of you with a fella. There was a few years back, but then they dried up and it's mostly you and your own. Do I take it that you're single and available? Single and ready to mingle, so to speak.
Once this COVID thing's over with, obviously.
I mean, I could take you out, like, but we'd have to stay 2 metres apart. And there's not much fun in that, is there, if you catch me drift?
I mean, she does have a fella, but to be honest, she sounds like my kind of woman because she's clearly stockpiling bog rolls for No Deal January.
I don't know, though. You could go, hey, I noticed that you're having to use quite low-quality bog roll. I'm in the podcasting game. I'm using... I could take you away from all this. You wind up with me, you could be... Your ass won't know what's hitting.
I'm using
double ply, quilted. That's podcasters' bog roll, that. Quilted and scented.
All I'm saying is, anytime you want to pop over and use it, my porch is always open.
And so is my bog, like. My postman, I've known him for a while because even in my old house in another part of Barnes he delivered to. Ooh. So I think he has quite a wide remit.
That's what they call it.
And my
brother
was a postman, and so I feel that I have a kinship with them.
Right. Yeah.
Because when I was a kid, my brother worked at West Central Sorting Office, which is the busiest sorting office, and it was fucking hard graft. It was his first job out of school. And he used to work shifts and come home and tell me stories about the post office, which
I'm going to tell you it.
At 8 years old, he'd come in from a night shift and I'd be like having my breakfast and he would tell me such stories of wonderment from the sorting office. And I was spellbound by them, right? Just working life was fascinating to me.
Which sorting office had a job. Was it the big one at Farringdon?
No, West Central. So I think it was near Charing Cross.
I don't know if it's still there. Fascinating. Isn't there a postal museum there as well, or is that somewhere else?
I don't know.
There's definitely a postal museum.
But he had lots of adventures, but he did effectively, not explicitly, but he sort of taught me to respect the postman, but to never trust the postman.
Yeah, be wary at all times.
Yeah, and he didn't ever say that because he himself was a postman, but the things that he told me about their antics made me think you can't really trust the postman.
Are they not honourable men? Is that what you're saying?
I don't want to say because also I fear postmen.
Let's just say back then they may not have been honourable men.
I think things have changed a lot.
Things have changed
This was Thatcher's Britain.
Yeah. Standards are a lot higher now.
Yeah.
Protocols my exist postman, that didn't.
I'm like, you know what? I do this and I go, all right, mate, how's it going? Because what I like to do is I like to affect a kinship and an understanding with the blue collar workers in my area, right? I mean, in my particular part of Barnes, there's sort of more blue collar workers because I live on the ex-council bit, right?
Yep.
And I live in a more affordable part of the area. Mm. And what I like to do is I like to pretend, Andy, that I am one of them.
Well, you've got the accent still. You've retained the accent, so that's good.
I can pull it off. So yeah. I'm like, all right, mate, like to the postman. And yeah. I'll say something like this to him. Cold enough for you, is it?
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean? Good. I don't know, but it's just something I've picked up. Yeah. Cold enough for you, is it? Oh, fucking hell. Doing a bit of postman in there, are you? Oh, don't blame you, mate. We've got to earn a living, haven't we? Right. Now, the guy two doors down, he has a large white van. And his son was at primary school with my daughter. And my wife talks to his wife. But he's a proper man, right? Mm. He's a white van man. But I think he has a level of seniority. But I'm not sure what he does. But it's with his hands. He looks physically capable, right?
Yeah.
And I'm slightly intimidated by him, but I don't like to show that, right? And one morning, so when I see him, we do the old sort of nod, like, all right, mate? All right? Yeah. Like that. Yeah, just dad's getting on with our lives.
Yeah.
I'll be up like early. Oh, up early, grafting. Yeah, you out in the white van? Oh, yeah, I've got a podcast to record quite early because as soon as Andy and I are back from our school runs, we like to record our the Rovers podcast.
Nice cup of tea.
I like to have tea first. If not, I get rather skittish halfway through.
Before I talk about a 1980s children's comic with the man in Sunderland.
I know.
Or perhaps today it'll be Roald Dahl's book, The Twins.
I try to pretend to him that I'm off to do something meaningful like him. But anyway, I sort of give him a sort of only semi-compliment, all right? And I think, you know, despite my best efforts to act like a man of industry, a man of work and toil, I think he can see through it. He's probably heard the podcast, mate. Look at this fucking ponce about.
It's probably the talk of the street. They're all talking about you and what you do or don't do.
Yeah, that lazy cunt on the road. Don't buy it for a minute when he does all that fucking strutting about pretending he's off to do a proper job. He's just rushing back to talking to his little home microphone, right?
Into his cassette recorder.
So, but one morning I was sat in the car just dicking around. It was quite early. Obviously. And I was dicking around like... Mm. And I was probably like looking at my phone, looking at Twitter, right? And he came out ready for his fucking early shift. And as he got into the van, I sort of happened to shift at that moment in my car and my knee pressed against the horn.
Oh, no.
And there was no one else in the street at all. Oh. So he looked up and all he saw was me in his car. And he looked at me like, what are you hooting me for? So all I could do was wave. And he just looked quizzical and waved back and then got in his van and drove off. And it was never spoken about again. But it was sort of like, I'd never done it before. I've never done it since. But having lived next door to him for like years, I suddenly just gave him a beep. All right, mate?
So don't you now feel obliged to do the beep every time you see him?
Little bit over the top, a little bit extra. I didn't think we were at the beeping each other stage yet. But fair enough, I'm not going to make a big deal out of it.
Jalapeño.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Jalapeño.
I told my daughter this yesterday. She was fucking mortified.
Yeah.
I said, this happened 2 years ago. She went, oh, I wish you'd never told me. That is mortifying, because she knows his son as well.
Well,
she's like, that is so embarrassing, mate.
That's 2 years ago. You're still thinking about it now. You'll still be thinking about that in 25 years' time.
Yeah. He's like, he's living in my fucking head rent-free, isn't he? I would actually like to be friends with him, but I don't know. I think he's got my number. I've seen you. I've seen you in your fucking air bubble trainers.
Practicing your jumping in your garden next to your fucking garden gym.
Like a fucking baby. You're building your muscles with your fucking weights. I tell you what, you wouldn't need to do that if you did something fucking proper for him where you had to lift shit in real life. Oh, I know. That's why I have them. Because I get so little physical exercise out of my work.
He probably sees you now and again in the morning and he thinks, there he is, the fucking beeper. Don't fucking beep at me again this morning.
Fucking beeping Timmy, I call him. My name's not Timmy, it's Sam. Yeah, well, you're beeping Timmy to me. Timmy,
the street weed.
That's what I am. Oh, no. It's a disaster. I'm beeping Timmy the street weed. Just as I thought I'd escape from being known as Fish Cake around my mum's way, I moved to a different area and tried to reinvent myself. But in fact, I've just become known as beeping Timmy the street weed. Oh. Well, when I used to live in the posher bit of Barnes. And there was a geezer, and he was a right fucking... I still see him around. He's a big bloke, and he's got the look of... He just looked like he was the head man of the firm, right? Yeah. And he came up... When I was still with the drink, I used to go into pubs in Barnes on my own sometimes and do some solo heavy drinking.
Of course, yeah. You've got to be committed to it, haven't you?
Yeah. You've got to be, yeah. And I'd just try and mind my own business, you know, and have a lot of alcohol. And one pub, it was his regular, and he came over to me and he went, "Oh, I know you. I've seen you on Sky News with Eamon Holmes." And I'd go, "Oh, yeah, that's right." And he goes, "Oh, let me buy you a drink." And and I said, "Oh, all right." And he sat down, we got talking, he wanted to know all questions about Eamon Holmes.
Of course, he probably had lots of questions about Eamon Holmes.
And so we had a chat and we got on quite well, and he sort of semi-invited me into his gang of local, like, rough men. Yes. Right? And I was real like, men. Fine.
I've got a gang of real men.
Yeah,
would you
there's
like
not
to
many
join
of
it?
Us around here, but I've identified you as a promising young candidate. Would you like to join? And I'm just like,
I was that
off my face at the time all the time. Well, we noticed you coming in here, heavy drinking, and then disappearing off to the toilets suspiciously often in the middle of the afternoon. We think you've got potential.
You seem like one of us.
Yeah. And I was like, I was like, all right, I'll join your fucking gang, mate. And but then one time I was in another pub and he was in there with all the other rough lads. Mm. But I was with my daughter, and my daughter was only about six, and we were having something to eat, and they gave me a wave, and I was a bit like, well, I thought I don't want to hang out with my rough mates gang today because I'm with my daughter. So the chief man came over and he said hello to my daughter and introduced himself. And do you know what he did? Mm. Gave her a tenner.
What?
Yeah. He went, "Hello, sweetheart, what's your name?" And she went, "Oh, hello." Like that. And he went, "I met you before, have I?" And she went, "No." And he went, "Here you go. I'll do this for all my mates' kids. Here you go. You buy yourself something nice." And she was like, her jaw fucking dropped, right? And I went, no, that's too much. And he went, "No, I won't do it. You ask any of the lads, all their kids get a tenner off of me."
Was it at this point you decided to put the flat up for sale and move?
I did think it was a bit weird, but I think he was just nice. But then when I told him, the thing that freaked me out once was that he came up to me and he went, "You still live in..." My old road was called Station Road. "You still live in Station Road, right?" And I thought, how the fuck do you know I was living in Station Road? Ooh. How do you know that, right? But I didn't say anything. I just thought, okay, he's the sort of bloke who makes it his business to know where every other person lives.
Yeah.
I thought, normal,
probably
fine.
Probably listen to this now.
If you are, then don't take this the wrong way. I think you're a great guy, right? But I do. No, all honesty, he's a really nice bloke. The point of the story is this, right? Because I stopped seeing him as much when I stopped drinking. Well, course, I bumped into him earlier and I told him, he said, I haven't seen you. And I said, so I stopped drinking 5 years ago, mate. So I'm not in the pubs anymore. But he is a nice guy and he's always been friendly. But when I told him I was moving up to this part of Barnes, which was about 6 years ago, he said to me, oh, you're moving out there, are you? And I went, yeah. And he was quite surprised because I think he thought, it's a bit rough for you, mate, right? And I went, yeah, well, you get a bigger place, blah, blah, blah. And he went, right. He went, now, I'm going to tell you, when you move up there to that road, he went, you ever have a moment's trouble, you tell them you're my cousin, right? And I went, I beg your pardon. And he went, you just, any trouble at all up there, it's fine, just tell them you're my cousin. That would be a lie. That would be a falsehood. Why on earth would I tell him that? And he just and like...
Also, I'm not anticipating getting into any trouble.
And I thought,
trying to keep my nose clean.
I thought, I know it's slightly, it's the rougher end, but it's the rougher end of fucking Barnes. I mean, you know, by any other fucking standard, it's not like the rougher end of Sunderland, right? Thanks. And I've gone, oh, all right. And I thought, fucking hell, what am I moving into now? The road seemed like a perfectly nice family road. I got onto my mate who was in the old bill at the time. And I went, can you fucking check out this road? I've just bought a gaff in. I said, because my mate from down the pub reacted that he offered me protection when he heard I was fucking living here. Like free of charge protection, but still.
Yeah, low level protection. So he checked it. Just the citation that you're his cousin. Nothing more.
But now if I bum into him, I go, you know, if he says, oh, have you had any trouble since you've been living there? I go, nah, no problem, mate. What I do is I always give a little beep if I see any of the other rough lads around so they know I'm one of them. Beep, 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 beep. Hello. Good morning.
Beeping Timmy.
Are you the one there called him beeping? I heard there was a bloke called beeping. I didn't realise it was you. Yes, I'm beeping Timmy, yes.
Would you like to see my muscles?
Are you the geezer who's got a garden gym? Yes, that's me, beeping Timmy, building his muscles every day.
Are you the one that practices jumping in your garden? Yes, yes.
The one who's got bubbles in his trainers? Yes, would you like to see them?
Watch how high I can jump. 1, 2, 3. Whee!
Whee! Look at me, I'm flying. Oh no, beeping Timmy. Oh no, actually that bloke, he is a good bloke and I really don't want him to know that I've become the beeping Timmy of the street, because I'd sort of convinced him I was one of the lads a bit, do you know what I mean, back in them days.
Well, you've said it now, it's out there.
It's too late now.
And as we earlier established, this podcast gets listened to a lot more than people suggest.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Well, remember what happened before with my mate Louis Collins? It got back to him, and I had to issue an apology.
Retraction, didn't you? Yeah.
A retraction and apology. Yeah.
Mm. Well, we ain't getting this finished today, mate.
What's rolled up to?
Well, he had his breakfast in bed and opened his post. That's as far as he got. At 10:30 a.m., he would walk through the garden to his writing hut and work until 12 p.m. He sounds
I'm
like,
I'm going to be writing hut.
I'm going to be podcasting hut.
But you haven't done. You've rolled. Do you want it? Shut up, William. I'm going to the writing hut. When will you be back? Will you be watching that? I don't fucking know yet.
I'll tell you when I'll be back. I'll be back at fucking noon. Because I'm only writing children's books.
I'll have fucking knocked out three by then.
And then he went back to the lunch. He went back to the house for lunch. Typically, a gin and tonic followed by Norwegian prawns with mayonnaise and lettuce.
Fucking hell. He knows how to live.
At the end of every meal, Roald and his family had a chocolate bar chosen from a red plastic box.
Whoa.
Special chocolate. Keeps it in a red plastic box.
Get out. Get the red plastic box out, will ya?
It's chocolate time. after a snooze, of course, he's living like us,
he
isn't
is,
he?
Yeah, he
very
is,
much like
fair.
Us. Working for an hour and a half in the mornings.
He's living like beeping Timmy,
having a bar of chocolate and a kip.
It's the beeping Timmy lifestyle, mate.
Our lives have converged. We've been slagging the cunt off for 20 weeks, and now it turns out he's just us. After a snooze, he would take a flask of tea back to the writing hood, yeah, and work from 4 p.m. till 6 p.m. There you go, another 5 books done. He would be
send
back
that at, to the fucking bank.
He would be back at the house at exactly 6 o'clock, ready for his dinner and the 6 o'clock news, probably. He always wrote in pencil and only ever used a very particular kind of yellow pencil with a rubber on the end.
I've always been a little bit suspicious of anyone who does all of that bollocks.
What, the handwriting thing?
I am a writer. Yeah. Now, you and I are rare, not to blow our own trumpets, but we're that rare thing of people who have actually managed to fucking make a living out of writing, right? And I'm always suspicious of people. Like, you're surrounded by people constantly in life who either claim that they're writing a book. I write a book, but they never really are. Mm. And you go, I think I have it in me to write a book. And you go, yeah, everyone has. But the only difference between somebody who's written a book and hasn't is nothing to do with fucking intelligence or aptitude. It's to do with fucking sitting down and writing fucking 60,000 words. That's it. Then you've done a fucking book. And that is the fucking thing that hamstrings most people. They think... And all this sort of, I use a particular pencil, is the thing that hamstrings a lot of people, right? Mm. Because they read, so this is quite famous, this stuff about Roald Dahl. There was a TV show, I'm in my writing hood, and it's all very particular, and I have my prawns and my special pencil.
And people, box.
And people think that that's the way you do it, that you have to dress it up in some sort of slightly kind of prissy ceremony, right? And that's what people's fucking... I've got an aunt who's going, oh, I've been writing my book for many years, and what I like to do when it's completely peaceful, I get out my typewriter and I make myself a cup of tea. And it's all part of, like, some sort of mental image they've had of how to write. But writing is just fucking writing, mate. Do it in a fucking biro. Do it on a fucking word processor. Do it in front of the fucking telly. Do it however you got to do it. Just get the fucking words written down, right? It makes no fucking odds whatsoever if you do all this bullshit. There was a, you know, I wrote those books about advertising. There was a famous ad guy and people would go, oh, he was such a wonderful writer. And he would always use a very specific pencil and they'd give you the fucking code of the pencil. And he would only ever write on a yellow legal pad and all this shit, right? Oh, yeah, is that how he came up with fucking you can't get quicker than a quick fitter, you cunt? Do you know what I mean? Writing about him like he's fucking Charles Dickens, right? It's a special pencil and a special pad.
He couldn't have done it without his enchanted pencil.
Yeah, is that how... And if he hadn't had that pencil, we'd have never had the line, slamming the lamb. Do you know what I mean? Fucking adverts, mate. You could fucking write it in your own shit on a toilet wall. It wouldn't make any difference to what the actual output was. Do you know what I mean? And that is the myth about writing. Like, people dress it up in some fancy pants thing. But actually, people write in all fucking different ways. And, you know, you're causing... And it's another form of procrastination to think, well, I will write, but not until I have my special writing shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking just sit down and write it, you cunts.
I don't have my post-it notes yet so I can plot out the novel on my wall.
Yeah. Back because off. They spend... Write people stuff. Want to write and instead of sitting down and writing, they spend fucking hours and hours Googling how to write and they're inundated with a load of bullshit of grifter articles with like, first, get your post-its and stick them on the wall, right? And it's like, no, first, sit down, start fucking writing and don't stop till there's 60,000 words.
Yeah.
Then go and have a fucking sleep.
Yeah, and then sort it out. Go back and then sort it out.
Exactly, sort it out afterwards, but just fucking write down. Step one, do not go on the internet and look for fucking some bullshit article about how you're supposed to write it. Just fucking write it, you cunt. There's a bit of advice for everyone there, and it's not even life logistics.
Well, it's true, though, isn't it? Because your first draft's your lump of clay, and you just knock out your lump of clay, and then you fucking go back and turn it
and you chisel away at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, don't stop and think about it. Just fucking write it. Don't
also,
think, oh, hang on, perhaps that sentence may have been slightly more elegant. Well, you've done it now, so just fucking write the next one.
Do the next
one. You've got
one.
Plenty
go
of time to go
on.
Back and fix it later.
Yeah. Also, don't write a book because it's fucking horrible. It's the worst
thing
it's
a pain
do.
In the fucking arse.
It's fucking awful.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's just hell. You commit to it so you can go prance about it. Yeah. I've got a book deal. And then you get the advance. And the first time I got paid a book advance, I thought I was, you know, relatively young. And it was, so the check that I got seemed enormous because I hadn't had a lump sum paid to me like that before. And I was like, look how rich I am.
I'm an author writer. Now. That's
all. Mother, all I do now is authoring. It's me, Sam, your son. I've made such a huge success of myself. You see, I'm a published author like Charles Dickens, right? And but really, the money, when you realise the amount of time it takes to write the book and you apply that lump sum to the days that you're spending writing it, it is actually quite a small sum. It's just you got it all up front, right?
And that was then. That was even worse, I think.
And now you're getting even worse when you prance about giving it the big one to yourself and any other cunt who'll listen. And then, again, there's only two good bits, I always say. The day that you get the deal and get your cheque and the day where you have the launch party and you stand up in front of everyone and all your pieces go, yes, well, everyone say well done to me. I did write a book and here it is. You can see it in the bookshop. I'm an author. But those are the only two good bits. The bits in between... Yeah. Truth be told, my third book, that's what drove me deep into a serious drinking and drug problem because I was trying to do it whilst doing three or four other jobs at the time in order to get the bills paid and just doing the work like you do when you're self-employed. You just take the work when it comes in. You're scared to say no. Mm. At least I was then. Now I'm getting a lot better at it, right? But, you know, and you do it all, but the book was like this thing over me and I think I was so stressed and anxious that I started using drink to just fucking get me through
it. Which book was that one? The third one?
Mad Men and Bad Men.
Right. I never had a fucking launch party for any of my books.
Well, then in that case, you only had one good fucking part of it.
Yeah, it must have been like, oh, well, he lives in Sunderland. We're all in London. Yeah, we probably won't want to come here for a party.
What if he asks us to go up there? That would be very awkward.
Put him up for the night or something like that. Maybe might have to build a nest in the office for him to sleep in.
Won't he sleep outside? I imagine he'll just
sleep in the train station or outside King's Cross and then he'll get on the train to go home at 5:30 in the morning.
What he'll probably do is get arrested and sleep in a police cell. He'll get arrested for fighting. And that's how that when the northern folk come down, they never have to pay for a hotel because they simply get themselves arrested for fighting.
He'll get arrested for fighting or interfering with an animal or something like that.
We had a northern author once and he tried to break into London Zoo, you see. And it was quite convenient because he was immediately arrested by the zookeeper. In a citizen's arrest.
We'll leave it there, Sam. We're not going to get it finished, but I think there's another episode in this, probably. So we'll do that next time. Thank you for listening. Ta-ta.
Goodbye. I've been Beeping Timmy.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.